Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Yes, we have changed the name. Okay, it's now Trisha's True Crime Radio, and we may tweak that just a little bit as time goes on. I would like to remind you that the opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the host, and the radio show has not one single thing to do with websleuths.com, which is a completely different corporate entity, or has anything to do with forumsforjustice.org. This is my whole deal. It's all about me and, of course, true crime and Kimster. Kimster, welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight, my dear. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Sorry I've been gone a while. I was out being a roadie for a rock and roll band.
That's okay. You know what? Rock and roll comes first above everything else. Well, it has just been a tragic week. I assumed that this radio show this week on my usual Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, would be all about the JonBenet Ramsey book by James Koehler. And it's not going to be. It's going to be partly about that, but first we're going to just talk about the horrific shootings that happened in Colorado at the Batman premiere at midnight. And on the phone with us now is Carol McKinley. Carol is based in Denver, in Colorado, and also she wrote a great article that appeared on the Daily Beast about the new book by James Koehler about JonBenet Ramsey, but she's also right there in the thick of things in this horrible shooting. And Carol, thank you for joining us tonight. I just wish we were talking about the book. This has just made me numb, and I think it's made everybody else numb too. Carol, what's the very, very latest that you have heard about the shooting?
Well, President Obama's here. In fact, I think he's meeting with the victims' families right now at the hospital nearby.
Mm-hmm.
I was out at the jail this morning. The latest is, he's not talking at all. We're hearing he's not communicating with the police. He's got a lawyer. He's a public defender, the lawyer is. He's one of our better public defenders here in Colorado out of a county called Arapahoe County, which is Aurora's county.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Jim O'Connor, and then Jim O'Connor defended, I don't know if you remember the Aaron A. Thompson case out here.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, he defended the father in that case.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody out here, I went out and talked to, it was kind of interesting. I hung out at the jail this morning and just talked to inmates who were released, for the day. Every morning they released whomever's done their time.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to a guy who said that all the people inside the jails are so mad at him that they're just hoping he gets let out into the regular population because they all want to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in lockdown.
Yeah, I was going to say I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but that's just the way they talk in jail. But apparently,
right.
He's in red, which means he's a flight risk. He's got the red goatee, the red hair.
Mm-hmm.
They're feeding him on a rubber tray so that he doesn't hurt himself in there. We had some video today. I work for ABC, and we had some video today of a science fair from 6 years ago that he, just video of him giving a presentation. And I tell you, he just looks like any other kid, very nice-looking young man, smart. He looks
very
good.
Smart.
I made the comment. He kind of looks like Peter Pan. He's kind of got these mischievous eyes and a funny little haircut. He just looks. He doesn't look like what happened.
He doesn't.
The other
kind of
interesting thing is they're not releasing his mugshot. I don't know why.
Why? Why? Yeah, and everybody is commenting on that. I don't understand why either, unless he just looks absolutely crazy and they think it will might harm a trial or something. I don't know. I mean, could that be it?
Yeah, I just don't. Nobody knows. Maybe he has a certain look on his face. There was a rumor around that he'd cut his mouth like the Joker, but I think if he had that this inmate I talked to today would have said something because they've all seen him. A lot of people they've fed him. They saw him when he was booked, and they said it was the fastest booking they'd ever seen in Arapahoe County because they just got him in and out. But don't know why, but the arraignment's tomorrow, and the question is, will he plead guilty or not and save us a trial or what?
He probably will plead not guilty for now, but eventually he will plead guilty. I can't imagine this going to trial. We're talking with Carol McKinley. Carol works for ABC, and she is based in Denver. She's a friend of our radio show and a friend of mine for many, many years. We're talking about the terrible shootings that happened in Colorado and about the suspect who is in lockdown, and apparently the other inmates would like a little piece of him. What I find, I don't want to use the word interesting because there's nothing interesting about it. It's just tragic all around. But it almost seems like this guy had a change of heart because, you know, he had his stereo up really loud, hoping that somebody would come in and turn it down because he wouldn't be home and they'd knock on the door and, you know, they'd either get the super of the apartment or the police to go in there and turn it down and boom, the thing would explode. He didn't need to tell them that, but he did. It's almost like he had a change of heart. And one of the almost victims, a young woman.
Tell? I didn't hear about that.
When they first arrested him, he told them that my apartment's booby-trapped.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay.
And another thing that he did, too. Let me put it this way, Carol. That was one of the first reports. Everything could have changed by now, as we know. Another thing, and I did see this interview with this young lady who was one of the who was in there that night. She said that he pointed the gun right at her, and she made eye contact with him, and said, "Please, no," to something along those lines. And he dropped his gun and didn't shoot, almost like they had a human connection for a moment, and that made him stop. So I'm wondering if he had like a human moment when all those cops came out. I don't think second he thought that they would catch him that quickly, but from what I understand, the cops were there anyway because it was such a big premiere. So I'm wondering if he just had a human moment and did this. Now, obviously, he's been going down this road of insanity for a while because when they talked to his mother said something to the effect of, "You've got the right person." What's tragic is, I'm sure in the days to come, we're going to hear about more and more strange behavior, but there's nothing anybody could do about it because probably it didn't seem dangerous. Have you heard anything about his descent into madness, which is what apparently has happened?
No, not really. The only thing we know is that he pulled out of school. He was getting his PhD in neuropsychology or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was it neuropsychology? I'm not sure. But he was a smart guy. I mean, I can tell you the University of Colorado at Anschutz, that's a very, very competitive school. I have friends whose kids couldn't get in. And so I don't know, I'm just speculating. He just pulled out of the program. Maybe he was just having some troubles with concentrating or whatever. But apparently today there was some talk that he might have tried to seek psychiatric help there at the school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
I mean,
talk about the, you know, everybody now, you know, if you go down to the theater, there it's still roped off with police crime tape.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big sign that, you know, people are signing for the victims. And I talked to I don't know if you've heard about the Navy sailor who died, but
yes,
but there, one of them was a young man who, out of California, he was grew up in Chicago but was stationed in California and had gone with his girlfriend and four Navy buddies to the movie. And I talked to her the last couple of days because she was going to interview with us and changed her mind at the last minute because she's so upset.
Uh-huh.
But apparently she told me that he covered her face with his first thing he did was cup her face and then push her down, hunch down over. And when he looked up, the guy shot him. And
his
Navy buddies. I mean, you've got military, young men, active duty right there, you know, with good instincts, and it's just
something you cannot for one moment prepare for.
Not when you're there to have a good time and it's the least last thing in your mind. She told me that they tried to move his buddies tried to drag his body out, but the shooter was still inside and they had to leave him in there. And it was just horrible for her. You know, she knew he'd just saved her life.
And if these people, their whole lives are now changed forever, absolutely changed, they will never be the same. There was one young man that was killed, Alex Sullivan. He was there celebrating his 27th birthday, and I believe he was going to celebrate his anniversary this Sunday. And I remember there was a picture of his father, and his face had so much pain in it. He's holding up a picture of Alex. It was before they identified everybody, and he couldn't find him. He couldn't find him at the hospital, couldn't find him anywhere, so it was pretty obvious he was inside. And he just held up his picture of the son, and his face, it looked like he was screaming, like he was just screaming at the top of his lungs because he was so angry. When I saw that, I thought, I can't imagine what these people are going through. And I don't know how to prevent something like this. You know, here's the thing. We've got to get over this baloney about not talking about mental illness, or that mental illness is a character flaw. You know, it's got to be something that we can look at and say, you need help. That doesn't mean you're a bad person. Get in here before they do something like this. Now, I mean, there are lots of people who have mental health issues that would never, ever, I mean, I'd say the vast majority, 99.9%, would never, ever do anything violent. They're just depressed. But this obviously was somebody who was walking the line of genius and madness. And it's going to be interesting to find out in the next few days just when he crossed over into madness. And again, what do we do? I don't know, Carol. I just don't know.
I think I was talking to one of our defense attorneys here in the state the other day, and he said that mental illness is going to have to become a topic of conversation because, I mean, a lot of our psychiatric hospitals in Colorado closed down. We used to have like 10, and I don't even know how many we have now. It's like maybe one or two. There are no beds in the hospitals. I know they're getting rid of them because usually people who are so far gone, you know, mentally, don't have health insurance. So hospitals don't want to keep those beds open. And, you know, eventually they're just kind of going away.
Exactly.
I don't know. There's definitely a very sad cloud hanging over Colorado. And when you drive around, the flags are at half staff. I think they ordered them at half staff. Oh, yeah.
I'm glad. I'm very glad. Kimster, can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're sounding okay now. For a little bit, you sounded like you were underwater, but you're back with us now. So now you're doing it a little bit again. So
know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call in. Can you keep talking to Carol? Carol, give me about 30 seconds. We're having technical difficulties. I'm going to switch off this microphone and call in, and then we'll continue, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Kimster, if you could carry on, if there's any questions from the chat room, and then we'll move on to JonBenet Ramsey, okay?
Okay, Carol, I don't have any questions from the chat room right now, so go ahead and add to what you were just saying, if you could.
Well, I guess the thing that's, this doesn't feel like Columbine, really. I mean, I covered Columbine, and this doesn't feel like Columbine because we've been shocked once already. The thing that's different, though, about this one is that the perpetrator is still alive. In Columbine, those guys, you know, killed themselves. Virginia Tech guy killed himself. What happened to the guy?
That's what I went away with, too. I went away with that too. Is that I was surprised he didn't kill himself. You know, by the time I'd heard about the shootings, they said he was. I was at work, and they said he was in custody, and I was surprised that he didn't, you know, kill himself because they usually do. Do you have any thoughts on why he didn't? This particular perpetrator?
No, I have no idea. I mean, all I can say is now we get to look at him. You know, now we get to find. You know, now. He didn't take the coward's way out, and so he's going to have to stand up to what he did, and he's going to have to be brought before the people of Colorado, and it's not going to be pretty for him. He is not going to get away with this.
Right. I think one of the reasons why he didn't kill himself is because he didn't have time. The cops were right there. And
well,
I don't
very
think
good
he,
police department.
Right, and they were, well, the reason why they were there, they were already there because it was such a big event. So, I mean, the cops were literally right there just making sure the crowd was under control. I think it was just a couple of police cars, but enough to, you know, stop this guy. The second he walked back out, he was down. And I think that's why he didn't kill himself. I think he would have, I really do, because that's how this always ends. But I think,
like I said, it's
yeah.
going to be interesting in a very tragic sort of way to see how his descent into madness occurred and what we can learn from it. And I just, poor Colorado, I mean, you know, it like you were talking about, Columbine and now this, it's just getting to be too much. But we'll keep an eye out, and we'll look for your reports, Carol, because we can certainly count on you. Yes, what were you going to say?
Oh, I just said thanks. I'm a producer now. I'm not on the air anymore. It's my correspondent's name is Clayton Sandell, so if you ever see him on ABC, that's who I work with.
Fantastic. Okay, we're talking with Carol McKinley, and Carol wrote a great piece for the Daily Beast about James Kohler's new book. Now, James Kohler is the police chief for Telluride, but at one time, he was an investigator in the DA's office when Mary Lacey was district attorney in Boulder. He was the head guy for the Chambonnet-Ramsey case, and he had access to everything. And basically what it was, he came to realize that the likelihood of an intruder was pretty much gone. And he made his presentation to Mary Lacey and said, you know, we need to look at the people inside the house. And she rolled her eyes, and he knew his time was short there. He quit, went back to Telluride, attempted to write the governor. I went, at the time it was Governor Owens, trying to get him to do something. Nobody would do anything. Everybody ignored him. He took his own money, and he wrote this book. And
yeah.
It is a, you know, he. I just heard from him, and it's like number 30 on Barnes & Noble. That's pretty good.
For a
self-published book. Self-published.
Are you kidding?
He did this. No, he just wrote me and just said, it's number 30 today. And for a self-published book, you know that's got to be good. And we haven't heard from Lynn Wood. Now, I have two thoughts. Now, Lynn Wood is Ramsey's attorney. I'm going to back up here. I'm going to backpedal just a little bit. In the book, he discussed a lot about John and Patsy and about Burke. Now, Burke's a very sensitive subject. Nobody is accusing Burke of killing his sister. Nobody is accusing anybody. We don't know what happened. But Lynn Wood sued a lot of people and organizations on behalf of Burke Ramsey. And so it's a very sensitive subject. But he talks about Burke in the book. And you know what? It's very... a lot of new stuff is revealed. Several new things are revealed. Here are my two schools of thought, Carol. Number one, Linwood is going to ignore it because he knows if he tries to sue, it's going to bring everything up because this guy knows what he's doing. He's not some big corporate agency that will just, you know, settle for a few pennies. He will get those people under oath, and that's it, and he knows what to ask. So it would be in Linwood's best interest to ignore it and let it fade away, or he's going to do what Linwood does best, and that's sue everybody. What do you think? Any ideas?
I can't really comment on Linwood. The Ramseys sued Fox News when I had a story, I think, on the 6th anniversary. We're the only people who ever... were able to have our case dismissed.
That's right, the judge dismissed the case.
Actually, Lynn Wood and I hadn't spoken since that time, and he and I were very cordial for the piece that I wrote. He took my calls, he answered my questions, and that was very helpful, you know, to have him. We actually had a good relationship in the writing of this piece. So
that's good. Well,
yeah,
Fox News.
I really don't want to comment on Linwood.
Understood. Fox News. Say what you want about them. You know, when they got the lawsuit dismissed by Linwood, filed it, and they got it dismissed. They stood up to Linwood, and that's what I've learned. When you stand up to him, you know, he sometimes will back down. But it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because, like I said, I don't think Kohler is one that you want to mess around with. Let me ask you something. Again, this is all just opinion. You know, everybody calm down. We're not saying this absolute fact. But Mary Lacey, would there ever be the slightest chance of an obstruction of justice, a reprimand, a slap on the wrist, anything for her horrible behavior in the investigation of the Ramseys?
Gosh, I don't know. Stan Garnett's told me that the exoneration letter she wrote will make it harder if this case ever goes to trial, just because people can bring that up. But
mm-hmm.
he doesn't feel that it would ruin a case if they had a smoking gun. He feels that he could defend against it. You know, if there
well,
was a smoking
here's
gun
a
th- on
yeah.
behalf of the Ramseys. But I can't answer that question. By law anymore. She told me she's retired and she's traveling. She's going to Hawaii next week.
What was very frustrating about Mary Lacey is she did this letter of exoneration of the Ramseys claiming the DNA exonerated them when the DNA did nothing of the sort. The DNA is an artifact, and Kohler pretty much proves that in his book. But she never took one question. She never held a press conference. She never sat down for an interview. And to me, that proves that someone is a coward. If they can't defend what their decisions are, then they're a coward. And to say I have no respect for Mary Lacey puts it very, very gently.
I thought it was
when
Jim told me, you know, that the part in James Kohler's book about the extra DNA, the touch DNA that was found in the garage and on the cords that were on her wrist, you know, and then he also counts the DNA into the fingernails that we'd always discount.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know about the DNA on the cord or on the garage. She told me that had not been developed when she came out and exonerated them. It was Andy Harito. I think he was one of her attorneys in the office. He was a DNA specialist. He's the one who presented that extra DNA at the task force. I asked her about that. You know,
mm-hmm.
Why didn't you talk about this extra DNA? You know, if that's unexplained as well. And she said, well, we took the panties and we wanted to know about the DNA that was in the crotch and we wanted to know about the DNA on the waistband, but we didn't, I didn't know about the other DNA. And then it was Andy, her assistant, who also, you know, brought the new DNA forward. I was a little surprised that she said she didn't know about it.
I'm wondering if she's, in my opinion, conveniently forgotten, because to exonerate somebody when you don't have everything tested, again, is beyond reprehensible.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they went back with this new touch DNA technique and looked at the murder weapons. I just don't know. I know the flashlight had been wiped down. The flashlight had, you know, that kind of crisscross raised metal that a lot of those mag lights do, so they couldn't get a good fingerprint or DNA swab off of it. But, yeah, I just don't know the answer to that. But to me, to have that much DNA that in critical places that doesn't match anyone,
mm-hmm.
you know, raises a lot of questions. And, you know, Lynn Wood made a good point. He said it's DNA that still doesn't belong to the Ramseys. You know, it doesn't identify them either.
But, okay, but what about the ransom note and all the lies that the Ramsey have told? They keep focusing on this DNA, and it's a red herring. It's like they've got, you know, they've got a piece of tinfoil that's real shiny over here while you're ignoring the big elephant in the room. And that's the ransom note, which we've gone over and over again. I just think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this unfolds, because I think it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And here's the beauty of it. James Kohler has no dog in this hunt. He used his own money. He doesn't have anything to prove. He has everything to lose. So he's pretty much untouchable when it comes to his reasonings behind it. Everybody else you can, you know, kind of taint, not that it's true, but you can, you know, throw some stuff at him and maybe make it stick, maybe not. I mean, I love Steve Thomas's book. I thought it was great. But a lot of people would say, well, he quit and made a lot of money. I don't think he made a lot of money, but he did quit and write a book. So, you know, this guy, he didn't write the book until after the governor, Governor Owens, totally ignored him. And he just went, enough, I can't sleep. You know, he didn't say he can't sleep. That's me. But he said, I can't, you know.
He couldn't.
He was
getting emails from him at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I would get like this email from him that he – But he did, he is, you know, did he tell you the proceeds, the profits from the book are going to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children?
Yes, if there are proceeds, if there are
profits. If there are any,
right.
Yeah. So he is going to donate that money.
Right. He's not going to take it. So there's no way that anybody on the Ramsey team can go in and say, you're doing this for, the only reason why he's doing it is for justice for JonBenet Ramsey and to get the truth out. And what's frustrating, too, we're talking with Carol McKinley, who wrote the article for the Daily Beast about James Kohler's new book, A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey. What's really frustrating to me is I want to know what is in the grand jury testimony because that sounds explosive. Wouldn't that be great if we could hear that, Carol?
I'm starting to think, and I don't know for sure, but I'm starting to think that they were asked not to write a report.
I would bet money on it.
Really?
I would bet, if I had $1 million, I would bet that Hunter said, thank you very much for your help, and goodbye. Because if you listen to, we've talked about this a lot, if you listen to Alex Hunter's statement after the grand jury, he said the grand jury has concluded there will be no indictment. He never said they voted. He never said they voted for no indictment. He just said they've concluded there'll be no indictment. It was a very interesting play on words. As close as I can, I would bet they never were asked ever to vote for anything.
Yeah. And I remember at the time, Mike Kane and I had become friends. He was a grand jury prosecutor. And I had my cameraman zoom in on Michael Kane because I wanted to see what his reaction was.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell me anything about what was going on in the grand jury ever when we were talking. He would give me information here and there. But when Alex Hunter announced that, Michael Kane was looking up at the sky. His lower lip was trembling.
Oh, wow.
He was very upset while he was standing there. But no one really saw him because they were all looking at Alex Hunter.
Now, there's one guy, Michael Caine, the person who...
I do think Michael thinks they should have done something and felt like all of his hard work had gone for naught.
I would love to interview Michael Caine.
Yeah, and I called him, too, for this article, and he never called me back. I think he doesn't. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do not want to talk about this case again. They're just done with it. They don't want to.
Why do you think they just are done? They just don't. They gave it their all, and there's nothing else, maybe? They're just fed up?
I think it hurts. It hurts too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael Caine was the prosecutor that presented it to the grand jury. Very nuts and bolts type guy, just the facts, someone that you could really hang your hat on and really trust, and he is one person I would love to interview. Kim, sir, do we have any questions coming from the chat room? My chat room is not working for some reason.
Oh, well, that's okay. What kind of
no.
comments did you get on the book this week? Are people reading it?
Oh, people are loving it. People are absolutely loving it. It's just all positive. It's amazing. It is, because it's a great book. That's the other thing. Even if you're not into the case at all, it's a great read. It's very, it builds and builds and builds, and you can feel the frustration as he comes onto the case and starts to, I predict it's going to be quite the seller, if you will.
Well,
I'm sorry, Kim, sir, did you say?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead, Carol.
Well, one thing I said in the article that I wrote for the Daily Beast was that I thought this was going to read like a Ramsey case encyclopedia, because even though a lot of the information that was in the book we had heard before or had been referenced before, it never was really written down.
Right.
You know, Perfect Murder, Perfect Town was a good one for up until the time it was written, but a lot happened after that, and so...
Mm-hmm.
James Kohler at least provided some documentation. You know, there's records now of a guy who saw all this stuff, and now if you can say, oh, what happened with the, with the pineapple? Oh, that's page 74. You know, so then you look at police point of view. You know, from the investigative side, you can at least. I mean, he told me that he wanted to write this book for the Boulder Police Department, who never could speak. Because they never really did. I mean, there were a couple of leaks. There were a lot of leaks early on, but after that, the Boulder Police Department just kept their lips zipped. And so Jim felt like he needed to write the book for the Boulder cops who were getting crucified.
And it does really...
Cops, you know, you hear that all the time. You still hear it.
Right. It does really show that the cops really did a good job, everything considered. So, I'm sorry, Kim, sir, did you say there were or were not any questions?
I have a question from Steely Dan, and he wants to know if anyone thinks that after the John Mark Carr fiasco that the DA is reluctant to do anything else on this case due to embarrassment.
I don't think John Mark Carr would stop Stan Garnett from doing anything. Whenever I talk to Garnett, he says, you know, the police have it now. I gave it to them. When they're ready, I'm ready. You know, I think if there were anything that developed that really looked like it was a smoking gun, again, not circumstantial, but something where they could really go after somebody, he would do it. But I don't think John Mark Carr is going to stop anybody, stop Stan Garnett.
Well, that's good to hear, but I don't see anybody coming forward and saying, here's what happened. Even if I just don't see it happening.
Well, and Mark Bettner, you know, when I was talking to him about this, he's like, yeah, there's nothing, you know, we don't have anything active right now. You know, if someone turns something in, we'll go after it, but we've got a department to run. You know, there's not a whole lot going on.
Right, there's other cases. Well, Carol,
yeah,
I promise you.
They went after the stuff, Jim, you know, the stuff in the book, they've done all they can. That's what Beckner told me. He said, we looked after after everything we could, even the train track. I mean, they don't have the train track. They have a picture of some train tracks from the house. They don't have the actual train track. You can't go to trial on something like that.
Right.
You know,
right,
so
even though
it's Jim
common.
Jim Fuller's leads are not, they're not going to solve the murder.
Right. Exactly right. But what they do show in Jim Kohler's book, they do show that what happened, how it all went down as far as inside the DA's office, and that in itself is worth the read, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, no, it absolutely, yeah. That was very interesting. You know, him coming to the conclusion that he did, feeling ignored. It's just one more chapter in the dysfunction of the case.
Dysfunction is right. Carol, I promise you we'd only keep you for 30 minutes. You've been working
okay,
like crazy.
Okay.
We actually woke you up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I just had a little time to lie down, but thank you so much. You guys are wonderful, and you guys do a great job going into the nooks and crannies of the information, and I thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Carol. You're always someone we can depend on. And name the person that you're the producer for on ABC again.
Oh, his name's Clayton Sandell.
Clayton, I know who that is. He does a great job, and it's because of you. That's all I can say. So, okay,
we'll
Carol,
you
thank
later.
You so much. You,
all right.
You take care. Go get some rest, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kimster, my darling, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, wow, that was good. I promised her we'd only keep her 30 minutes, so that's what we did. Anyway, what did you think? It was pretty good. She's kind of hard to hear, but
yeah.
Boy, she's really, really, she knows her stuff. She really knows her stuff. She gave us a little bit of inside scoop, which is always good, and Carol McKinley is just absolutely one of my favorite people, just an amazing woman. All right, let's go to the Web Sleuth Hot Cold case. This is from websleuth.com, and we feature a hot cold case. It's a cold case that we want to turn hot again, and Kimster is the one to do it. Kim, go for it.
Well, hello, and I'm sorry I haven't been here to do the last couple of weeks. I do want to make a little brief note that if you go into the, I think it's the 1980s, I left the spotlight on flashing on websleuth.com, 1980s missing for a girl named Janice, that the unidentified group, they were looking at some unidentified remains, and this girl came up, and now they have brought her case back up to light. It was colder than cold. It couldn't be found anywhere. Carl Kay, who is our mini moderator extraordinaire in the unidentified, went and found her picture, Tricia, in a school yearbook. They found her sister. Her sister is totally blessed by the fact that our members have brought her sister's missing case back to light. So that was last week's, and I wasn't here to announce it. So I left the light on. It says Spotlight Case, and it flashes. So go in there and check her out. Her name is Janice, and for some reason her last name is not coming to me right now, and I didn't write it down because this is kind of a spur of the moment. I decided to to talk about her since we had a little extra time. But anyway, go in there and check her out. You'll find her in there. I'll if she hasn't been discussed the case today, I'll bump her up. But she has been a very hot cold case since that happened. But this week's cold case was brought to me by one of our members who used to live near Bob Christian. The information I'm about to share with you is from a wonderful website dedicated to finding the lost called the Doe Network. They have people and they have unidentified remains listed on the Doe Network. So if you haven't been there, Google the Doe Network and go check them out. It's an awesome site. Been there for a lot longer than even NamUs, which is like, you know, the hot one these days. But Robert Bob Christian, he went missing during a trip from Madison to Baraboo, this is in Wisconsin, on September 16, 1977. He had dinner with his parents at their Madison home, and after eating, he tossed a change of clothes and his bow hunting gear into the back of a Hornet station wagon and headed to the bank. After he picked up $25, he planned to drive to Baraboo and meet a friend who was local resident Randy Griffith for Saturday morning deer hunting in the Baraboo Bluffs. If they weren't successful in finding a deer, Robert planned to return to Madison that afternoon and attend a Wisconsin Badgers game. He stopped at a nearby Walgreens, and he picked up a pack of small cigars, and Bob probably drove to the Madison Beltline Highway, headed west to Highway 12, and took it north to the Baraboo area. Later, Randy Griffith's mother, a longtime family friend, called to say that Bob had not arrived in Baraboo, and Bob's family began calling authorities in Dane, Sauk, and Columbia counties to find out if Bob had been involved in a car wreck. They also called the Madison police. They eventually took a report on the disappearance and started their investigation. On the Friday of the disappearance, a Mauston woman visiting a nun near the Durwards Glen retreat site encountered a car in her friend's driveway that matched the description of the Hornet and it had the same license plate. The young male driver of the car matched Bob's description, and he told the woman something like, "I'm looking for my friend. I'm supposed to meet my friend." The young man said he must be at the wrong place and then drove away east, away from the relay tower. Bob's vehicle was later recovered. It was parked in a driveway near the State Patrol relay antenna on Tower Road, southeast of the city. The wheels, tires, and the battery were gone. The sheriff's department followed up on a tip and found four old tires and the hubcaps from the Hornet in a quarry just south of the Badger Army ammunition plant and north of the Prairie du Sac. Apparently, somebody had switched the tires from the new car from worn-out tires on their vehicle and then dumped the hubcaps. It's unknown if the stripping of the car and Bob's disappearance are connected or if somebody found the Hornet after he disappeared and took what they could. The sheriff's department brought in a bloodhound and followed Bob's trail a short distance from where the car was found and then lost the scent at Tower Road. They also used a National Guard helicopter to search open fields in the area. At the time of the disappearance, Bob was a freshman at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and was excited to begin studies leading to a degree in computer programming. He's described as a very reliable and honest person. This is so sad. So join our members who are actively sleuthing this case and give us some thoughts on the new leads. Go to www.websleuths.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Bob and a link where you can click and directly go to his thread. And remember, if you aren't a member of Web Sleuths, join for free today. Please help give Bob and his loved ones the justice they deserve.
Thank you, Kim, sir. And once again, I want to stress to everybody, even if you go on any thread, especially in the missing or in the cold case, and just offer support. That means so much. So don't think you can't make a difference, because you certainly can. Thank you so much, Kimster. And to remind everybody that we are trying to keep Donald Scott Brunstetter behind bars. He is a convicted pedophile. He comes to a parole hearing this Tuesday. If you go to www.websleuths.com/forums, and scroll down to our CAPER forum. That's Citizens Against Pedophiles Early Release. Go on there. You can find out how you can write the parole board. And let's keep Donald Scott Brunstetter behind bars. Kimster, this is going to be a short one this week, kind of due to technical difficulties. So hopefully next week we'll have it all straightened out. But next week's guest, I don't know, Steely Dan, our wonderful Steely Dan, said he might help me try and line up some guests. So we'll see what he comes up with. The only thing he's talking about, though, Kimster, is an emu. So I don't know what the heck he has planned for us next week. Some sort of animal show, I guess, right?
Well, I think that he might have a missing emu case or something we can discuss.
I think that's it.
I'll have to go to our cold case files and see what I can drum up.
Anyway, so between Steely Dan, myself, and Kimster, we are going to put up a great show for you next week. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody. Thanks, Kimster.